Welcome back to the MLL podcast and on Inside the Cross Podcast Network. I'm Kyle Devitt. I'm the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside the Cross. And I am joined by the illustrious, the magisterial Chris Rosenthal. Chris, what's going on?
Kyle, welcome back to the MLL season. Welcome to everybody just kind of getting involved who hasn't really been paying a lot of attention. I gotta say, this year has kind of been the best kept secret going. It's been nuts. It's been insane. And I am glad we're back to talk about it.
And that's exactly why the first thing we're going to do, among many new things for this version of the podcast compared to last season, is we're going to go right into a season recap, because we know, hopefully, you know, the intention is that you listen to this and you haven't seen an MLL game yet, and you listen and you go, I'm going to go watch an MLL game. So we're going to get you caught up so you can go do that. We're almost halfway done with the season, thanks to the early start. So we thought, again, we'd go team by team, let you know where the team is at, who their best player is, and one surprising thing that's already happened with them. Up first, because we're doing this alphabetically, are the Atlanta Blaze. Chris, what is the deal with Atlanta?
The Atlanta Blaze, so they're 3-3, tied for fourth place. They have scored the exact same amount of goals they've given up. Like, could not be more right in the middle. Just had a little bit of a setback, loss against New York. But we'll take a look at a couple of key elements of the team. First of all, let's start with their best player. The best player, once again, is Kevin Rice. Return form, holding down their offense. You know Kevin Rice. You know, he's kind of the guy, the gear that everything turns around. Kind of runs the spotted X, finds everybody, makes everybody around him better. That kind of guy. Leading the league in points, too. He's right up there with Rob Pinnell. Thing I didn't kind of notice until about Kevin Rice, after six games, he's got 19 assists. He's already three assists away from a personal, like, season high, and it took him nine games to get there last time. So he's finding everybody else. You kind of think Kevin Rice, you think quarterback, but he's done a lot of goal scoring, and he's actually elevating his feeding this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that the surprise, there were, I don't want to jump all the way to surprises, but the surprising thing is not just Rice. Like, I think we all expected Rice to be great. We all expected right. Scott Ratliff to be great. And, you know, we have another surprise written down here, but I think the other surprising thing is how seamlessly Matt Gibson and Tommy Palisak have fit into that Atlanta attack line.
Yeah, definitely. You know they're coming over and you know their individual skill sets, but you still don't really know if it's going to work, you know? And when they just kind of punched them right into the lineup, it worked really well. And you can tell that the faith, like, that Liam Banks has in those guys. A lot of times if a player misses a shot or whatever, they will specifically let Tommy Palisak go get it. You know, it's not always, okay, let Kevin Rice do the heavy lifting, everybody else, you know, get where you can. You know, these guys have solid roles. And, you know, like Matt Gibson, we know what Matt Gibson does. And, you know, letting Tommy Palisak do what he's capable of doing has, I think, really elevated the whole kind of offense around. And another big thing for Atlanta just recently went down is their trade to pick up Joe Nardella from Boston, which kind of addresses a concern they had at the faceoff position. You know, they drafted Jake Withers last year, but he's been very successful in LL, so he's still playing and hasn't shown up yet.
They traded him too.
Yeah. They traded him too at this point. So, I mean, you know, because what are they going to do with both of them, really? So, I think the Nardella move is big for them to kind of just not have to worry about that, and because, you know, you think he's going to be around for most games.
My only issue with the Nardella thing is it's a first-round pick for a faceoff guy.
Yeah, it is crazy that that's kind of like the currency now for these, you know, because Withers was their first round guy the previous year. And it's just like, is that just the going rate now for a faceoff guy? Are people so desperate to have, you know, consistency at that spot?
Are we going to trade first round picks for goalies next? Like, what are we doing? I don't think it's important, but I think that, you know, there's so many possessions in MLL. That, yes, winning faceoffs is important, especially in the clutch. Like, the closing moments of games are so important. But being a good faceoff guy in the MLL is so dependent on so many other factors. And I feel like they're rotating through a lot of guys. The days of dominance are pretty much over. It's all matchup play. It's like this faceoff guy is really good against these four guys, but he's terrible against these two guys. Right. You know, and that's what we're seeing play out. And I think that's part of why you're looking at the records and being like, what is happening? But I'll let you close it out with the surprise for Atlanta.
Yeah, so the surprise is, Adam Gettleman was gone, doing his Utah coaching thing and everything for a while. And Chris Madelon, very, very good at goal. Not just like, some backup who's, getting hit by some shots. He was really good. And I think that was a surprise for a lot of people watching, that there wasn't really a drop-off. And, Gettleman's back now. But do you automatically give him the job back? It doesn't seem the dumbest idea to just keep Madelon in at this point, right? Or do you automatically give it to Gettleman once he's back?
I think Gettleman's been dressed, and it's Madelon's position to lose now. I think he's the number one incumbent guy. He's second in the league in save percentage. That's crazy. I remember I think he had his first great game. I want to say it was against Florida. And he had like a crazy, I feel like 17 saves. And I was watching, I was like, Madelon? Madman? Which Madelon is this? And I had to go look it up. I don't remember the last time I had to do that about a starter in the MLL. Like, that's how crazy a point we're at this early this season. And guys are popping out of the woodwork altogether, which is why we kind of did the surprise part of this category for each team, because there are so many surprises to go around in the league. I'm going to talk about Boston. The Boston Cannons are 2-5 and tied with Florida for last place, although they just beat Florida this past week for their second victory. Their best player, is it Will Sands? Is it Max Seabold? Is it 6 goals on 16 shots, Mark Cockerton? Is it, after one game, Trevor Baptiste? There's so many questions with the Cannons, I don't even know where to start. Do you have a logical starting point?
Let's tackle those best player nominees. I gotta say, I didn't doubt it coming in, but I've been surprised and pleased by Will Sands' performance.
Yeah.
So from college, from Bucknell, you're getting kind of like quarterback who can score, and he shows up his first game and he's like, hey, guess what? I'm a crease guy. Guess what? I'm Joe Offball. And you see him against Florida and he was just handling restarts from X and like dishing assists from X at this point. It's very rare to get somebody who can succeed in multiple roles right away. And, maybe that's just a product of his offense. They kind of can give him the keys and say, hey, we're a 1-win team. We're a 2-win team, go do your thing. And, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Will we even know? So he's got the freedom to really kind of flex on the defenses. And he's delivered so far.
Yeah. I Max Seabold, plenty of juice left in the legs. I actually went to a Cannons practice, before they played Florida last Saturday. And they seem, there's a ton of new faces out there. Met Trevor Baptiste, who, by the way, Trevor Baptiste is a super nice guy. I just want to put that out on this podcast. Have you ever met him?
Yeah, that's good to hear. I've never met him.
He's pretty dope. I was like, oh, he came up to me and said hi. I was like, oh, hi. I had talked about you for like 4 months. Hi, what's up? And it was weird and awkward for a second, but still, sure. It was fun. It was good. And he played well. I think it took him a little bit to get used to the cadence because he didn't start the game well. But, the Cannons got that second win, and he scored his first goal in his first game as a faceoff guy in the MLL. I don't think it's Mark Cockatran. It's kind of a joke, although he was. He got all his goals off of, like, broken plays. And you know what? Doesn't matter. He still got goals. And we're going to put up our team of the week later this week, and I think he might be on it. I'm not sure. I think the surprising thing about Boston is that there isn't anything too surprising about their start. They lacked a lot of talent. You don't say this about many teams in the MLL. I think they just lacked a lot of talent in fundamental areas. They don't have a ton of all-stars on that team. They have a lot of, prospects, that they're developing, and now they're getting in some veteran proven goal scorers like Cockerton, and you know, they're working in Baptiste, and you know, they're getting production out of Will Sands. So I think the difference between this year's Canons team and last year's Canons team is you see that the front office is making moves to fix 2-5. They're not right, like, yeah, oh, 2-5. Crap. What do we do?
Right. Two quick things I'll say about Boston. Shout out James Pinnell. We did not forget you. You are quite good at lacrosse.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And surprise. I was surprised that they traded Davey Emelie. You know, they put out the statement saying they specifically said in their statement, you know, Davey Emelie wanted out.
Yeah.
I was surprised to hear that from a team. Because usually it's just like, you know, eh, you know, trade happened, whatever. But they were specific with, you know, Emelie requested to go. So I was surprised to see that kind of forthcoming information. But, I mean, you know, if this game's any indication, and, you know, we'll see if it holds true for the future, it seems like it might work out just fine for him.
Yeah, they also traded Kyler Balestri earlier in the season, who's actually doing really well in Denver, because he's a guy who would do well in Denver with that free-flowing offense. We're not quite there. One last thing on James Pinnell. James Pinnell should narrate audiobooks. Voice of like a gravelly angel falling to earth. I got to tell you. I was stunned. Stunned. Met him as well last week. Chris, what can you tell me about Charlotte?
I can tell you the Charlotte Hounds are 5-2. They are sitting atop the league standings right now, even after taking the hit this past weekend against the Denver Outlaws. And they are playing exceptionally well with a lot of moving pieces that have kind of been in and out of the lineup. You know, they're one of those teams. Some teams are kind of the, you know, peg in the general core and maybe a couple people will contribute here and there, kind of like your Lizards types. You know what you're getting right away. Charlotte hasn't been that way. They have guys coming in at different times for whatever reason. You know, like you have Kevin Crowley come in when he can. Their attack is kind of rotated. You know, they threw Dylan Maltz in for a few games and he kind of blew up, but I think he's gone now and they've got another situation that they feel like they're going with. But however you do it, you do it. And that's how they've gotten 5 wins so far. I mean, that's kind of the name of the game in Major League Lacrosse, right? You got to work with what you have. So again, 5-2, best player for those guys, I got to say Matt Rambo. He has been, I guess best way to describe it was college Matt Rambo. He's kind of been like that, you know, physically imposing, finesse at times as well. Not afraid to go crease diving, which is an element of his game I did not necessarily expect, because you don't see it, you know, in college for obvious reasons.
Yeah. But it's like watching a rhino dive into a goal mouth.
Like, yeah.
Can't be fun to be a goalie and see Matt Rambo flying through the air at you.
No. I'm probably just jumping out of the way, I think.
Yeah. I think everyone is.
Yeah. So I would say Rambo's the best player. Honorable mention going to Charlie Cipriano, who's had a very strong start in cage. Has kept them in a lot of games that might have gotten out of hand. It looked like their past game, there were a lot of sun issues in the whole stadium. Both goalies, you know, kind of came out to slow starts, just I think by nature of the time of day that the game was taking place. And he got replaced by Pierce Bassett. But I don't think there's any concern there. I think it's going to be his job. Just wanted to kind of, you know, give him a breather, get him out of the fire there. But, yeah, Cipriano has been great for them as well. Surprise? I think it's also going to be Matt Rambo. You expected some success. And I'd heard in the preseason, you know, oh, he looks great. He's finally had a chance to rest. Because, you know, I mean, of all those players coming out of college last year, a Maryland guy, he played so much. And then you tack that on the fact that he's Matt Rambo. So if you're Matt Rambo playing for the championship, the weight of the entire College Park region is on his shoulders. He was exhausted. So what I'd heard was we never really got what we should expect from Matt Rambo last year. And so this year he's turning it around and third in the league in points right now, 32 points for him.
And for... You know, if you didn't watch him play last year, it just I think that he was just carrying too many injuries, like you were kind of alluding to. And he didn't produce, just flat out. Like, truth is truth, didn't produce. And the fact that he's put up 32 points, he's third in the league, that's nuts if you watched him play last year and just had that as your knowledge base. But yeah, I think he's absolutely the surprise for Charlotte. Let's move on to the Chesapeake Bayhawks. Chesapeake is 4-2, kind of in the middle, upper tier of the standings. They've had a pretty good season. They have weird losses. They weren't very consistent early on, but I think they're really hitting their stride. They're getting a bunch of their indoor players back. Lyle Thompson, I believe, is back this week. And, you know, Chesapeake's best player, not a surprise to anybody, leading them in scoring is Miles Jones. And I think that last year teams kind of figured out how to guard Jones. And the way you do that is you make him not get the ball and you put him in positions where there's always someone on his hands. So he has to make a tough catch. He doesn't really love going to his left hand. You know, you kind of try and push him out if you can, or you throw a back check on him. This year doesn't matter. He's literally just alley dodging into the depths of Mordor. Every time he gets the ball, he has improved his spot up shooting. His catch and shoot has been at a next level. I think that we're seeing a Miles Jones that, you know, is maybe a little upset he didn't make Team USA and is going to take it out on the rest of the league. And I think that that's not great for the rest of the league. I think he's easily their best guy. He's the guy they look to. He's the guy who creates, facilitates, and gets key goals for them. What are your thoughts on that?
First of all, I am 100% here for angry Miles Jones. Yeah. Like, it is an absolute joy. And you see it. Like, I don't even know if it's angry, because, I mean, it doesn't seem to make him mad, but you will see him, like, dragging a defender, and then he will score anyway, and then he'll just, you know, pull out the bicep and do a flex or something like that. Like, I don't think that's so much anger as, like, you know, I'm so pretty, you know, styling after you score. But that being said, there's going to be some anger that, like, precedes that.
Yeah.
You know, like, how dare you? And I am completely here. Any sort of angry Miles Jones, I would like to watch that take place and watch people just, you know, flying off of him, trying to cover him.
Yeah, don't put a shorty on him.
No. And people do put shorties on him, and they just kind of do that to concede that they're going to need somebody else right away.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only time it seems to happen. He is, I think, the most important player on that team, hands down. You know, he just draws so much attention. Everyone else is so concerned by what he's about to do, you know?
Yeah, he's a guy that you have to know where he is.
Yeah, yeah. He just takes up so much focus. That's the thing about watching Miles Jones. Everybody else is like, okay, as soon as he gets it, we're all going to freak out a little bit. And it is fun to watch.
Yeah, and, you know, Chesapeake's had really, really good years from a ton of – Chesapeake's always kind of been like this the last couple of years, where they're getting production game in, game out from different guys, but they're dressing a similar amount of guys. Last year, I think they dressed a lot of, you know, I think they dressed a different lineup every game. But yeah, this year, getting a little bit more consistency. And I think that comes down to finding a faceoff guy that works for them. And that guy is Stephen Kelly, who is a damn revelation at the Faceoff X for the Bayhawks. He is my surprise for the Bayhawks organization. He is above 60%, and he doesn't even need his wings most of the time. He's a win it and go to cage kind of faceoff guy. And I think the Bayhawks haven't had that ever. Right. I don't remember the last guy that was like that, that they had on the roster. Ben Williams, maybe you could say that, but they, you know, they just traded him to Florida. So, I mean, he's really kind of transformed how they play. The Bayhawks have a bunch of guys that can play different positions, like, you know, Matt Abbott obviously can play pretty much anywhere. If he needed to be the backup goalie, I'm pretty sure they just suit him up for that, just to dress him on the 19. But yeah, I think the Bayhawks are really hitting their stride. I think the problem is sometimes they have too many mouths to feed on offense and not enough people get enough touches. And you see a lot of wasted possessions in the games that they've lost and the games that they've won pretty handily. So I think that, you know, Chesapeake is a sleeper kind of dominant team, even though they're 4-2.
Yeah, I would say so. And it's going to be, I'm interested to see how they pencil in the newcomers once they get there. Like you mentioned, Lyle Thompson, Matt Danowski, like if he's going to take the same role again, or I mean, like I said, 4-2, that's not bad. It's going to be interesting to see how they fit the rest of those guys in there. Real quick question about Chesapeake. I was just thinking about, you watch more college than I do. I watch some, but you watch like every game. Colin Heacock, who is presently doing work for the Chesapeake Bayhawks, had a big game last weekend against them. Is he way bigger than he used to be?
Oh, yeah. The rumor that I've heard is that he's going to go try out for an NFL team.
Okay.
Dead serious. Like, that is he is way bigger. And he's still fast. So it's actually, like, scary when he gets the ball and ahead of steam to see what the defender is going to do. So yes, he is much bigger. I believe he has 19 points just underneath Jones, who had 22. So he's second on the score sheet for them. But yeah, he's definitely improved, and you know, he's getting a little bit more time at attack as well. So right. I think we're seeing a little more crystallization there. Obviously when the other guys come back, like we were talking about Lyle, when he comes back, Heacock will probably move back to midfield, but as is, he's done a really good job so far at attack for them. Chris, what about the Dallas Rattlers?
Dallas Rattlers, 5-2, very successful. The transition has been pretty seamless from Rochester. You would think maybe there'd be some bumps along the road, especially in a league where everybody's in a full-time guy. You think maybe some people have to stay higher. That lay pretty much intact, and I think that's one of the keys to their success. They made a couple trades, a couple adjustments in their offense. Attack looks a little bit different. You know, first games, they had Chris Bocklet in there for a little while. Randy Stotts, once his NLL season was done, he's been over there kind of doing his thing. But, of course, their best player is and remains Jordan Wolf. He dropped out for a little bit. He missed, I believe, a game. Had some got a little banged up against Ohio, I think. But other than that, you know what you're getting with Jordan Wolf. You're getting just a nightmare from X. Just shoots out like a rocket. And then, you know, be it a jump shot or just run straight by you. Just one of those things you just don't have an answer for more often than not. He's picked up right where he left off.
Yeah, I think he is definitely, you know, the star of that team. And, you know, no spoilers because you probably read the title of this, but he is our interview this week on the MLO podcast. So stay tuned for that. That'll come up in a couple more segments. Yeah, I think maybe we blew out of proportion the move from Rochester to Dallas. Maybe.
Maybe, but I think we were right to. I mean, you know what I mean? Like it's not like going from, you know, Rochester to Ithaca or something like that. You know, like, you know, if they have a game on a Friday, you know, we can't assume everybody's going to be there, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, I think we had a right to, but they've pulled it off nicely.
I mean, you think about it. This is a team that now is playing in front of people.
Yeah.
When it was playing in front of pretty empty seats for the majority of their success. And, you know, I think it made them better, but now they have the added element of people cheering, which I don't think that they're probably used to. Positive reinforcement. Imagine that helping your team out. Any other guys on here that stand out for you? I know Ty Thompson has been on fire. I mean, at one point he was tied with Wolf for the lead in goals in the league with 20.
Yeah. Ty Thompson has played really well. And, I mean, he's played really well in the past, but he hasn't been consistently on rosters. They've been like, you know, great job, Ty. And then when the other people come in, and he kind of, you know, bounces away. But I feel like he's definitely locked down a spot. He can't having somebody like him working alongside someone like Wolf, who, you know, once Jordan Wolf gets to goal line extended more often than not, you've got a slide coming his way, or at least people are trying to cheat. And if he just kind of, you know, sees Ty Thompson anywhere, because Thompson's one of those people, you know, everybody kind of attributes it to box training, you know, just get it in his neighborhood and he's putting it away. So, I mean, he's been outstanding in that regard. And I think it's one of these reasons we're going to see Jordan Wolf, you know, probably having one of the best feeding years of his career, just having Ty Thompson there to catch anything that he, you know, draw a slide and he can put it away. He's been doing great.
Yeah, Ryan McNamara also doing really well for down in Dallas, sticking an OT winner for one of Dallas's five wins. So shout out to him. Let's talk about Denver. I thought this was going to be a lot sadder, but thankfully they won last week. Because at one point, I think they were 1-4. They are now 3-4. So good news there. There is an upswing. They looked all out of sorts to start the season. I don't know what was up with that. I can't. Maybe it's BJ Grill not being there, but I can't pick one player out and say it's his fault. You know, BJ Grill had not signed his MLL contract this year, so he wasn't eligible to play. But I can't imagine that's the only reason, right?
No, I wouldn't imagine either. But I would definitely think he's one of those guys who, when he's not there, he's appreciated a lot more than when he was. I think he probably cleaned up a lot of the loose ends that we saw kind of becoming exposed earlier in the season. And they were like, oh, you know, maybe we don't have as many answers as we counted on heading into the year.
Yeah. Yeah. The Denver polls have been, by and large, very turnstile like in their approach. There's I think I'm not even going to say which poll it was, but Rob Pinnell put a guy in a blender and I don't think he's been the same ever since. You know,
that'll do things to you.
I would say it'll do things to your mind, that's for sure. Although I will say Denver's best player is Matt Kavanaugh, who is leading them in scoring despite missing a game with a concussion. This right. Dude on the left side, maybe the most lethal and scary guy running at you from the wing and driving on that side from X as a lefty in the league.
Yeah, and Matt Kavanaugh is one of those guys. Most lacrosse fans have probably known who he was for, like, what, 7 years or something like that? Yeah. But I still feel like you can watch him play and then kind of, like, turn to somebody and be like, I don't think you understand how good he is. You know, maybe that's our fault. I don't know. Maybe we're not making the spotlight big enough. But he is a problem on that lefty wing. And like very few others, if any others, on the lefty wing in this league right now.
I can't think of anybody. He's so quick. He's able to just break his man and get to where he wants to. And sometimes it's for a far pipe snipe, and sometimes it's just a simple pass and a look down at the guy after you burn him. You know, he's just that mean. You know, like, offensive players can be mean too. I think, like, we always like push forward this myth that all the mean guys are defensemen. That is untrue, friends. That is untrue. It's okay for attackmen to be mean with their moves. They have the ball. The ball is the bullet, and they're the gun. I think Denver has not gotten consistent output from anyone else except Law and Kavanaugh, and it's really messing with their chemistry. I think people are not canning their shots, just straight up. I think Denver's got a problem. They used to just manufacture transition like they were in a factory, and now they can't. And they're learning that, oh, crap, we have to play in the six. We have to play quick, but also if we play too quick, we're going to turn the ball over. So I think there's an adjustment period there that they're getting used to. I definitely did not expect them to be 3-4 at this point, but 3-4 is better than, you know, 2-5, which we'll get to with the next team. But any other thoughts on Denver before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, they've just had a lot of rotating pieces, you know, and I don't know what the team is going to look like, but it feels like it's getting in a positive direction. You know, Westberg's back in the lineup. Zach Currier came back. You know, once they kind of add all these pieces and kind of file it down, you'd have to assume, based on Denver's previous track record throughout the years, that they're going to figure it out. But it's really just been dealing with all the kind of uncertainty so far. And the defense, you know, do they have three poles at close that they're going to keep there, or are they still trying to figure that out as well? Because, I mean, they got away with it doing some rotation against Charlotte, but I don't think that's going to be something they're going to want to keep testing moving forward.
Definitely not. And shout out to rookie Chris Cloutier, who had 6 goals and 2 assists in his first game.
Yeah.
And is a monster in the MLL. Who knew? Pretty much everybody.
right.
Pretty much everybody going in. Chris, what can you tell me about the Florida Launch?
Florida Launch, 2-5, hanging out in the basement with Boston, who just beat them this past weekend. So that's not great. You know who you get with those guys. You know, you've got Kieran McArdle back in the lineup, Dylan Malloy, Ryan Drenner, Justin Henneberg, they drafted. So I think they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do there, if they're going to make Henneberg a strict midfielder. But that's kind of a situation they're going to have with a couple guys, Nick Mariano, so on and so forth. Their best player, I think, is Tucker Durkin. All due respect to the offensive guys we named, but Tucker yep. Durkin is just such a valuable defender. There aren't many like him, and by that I just mean pencil him in, and then you don't really necessarily need a plan B. He's just a dominant defender.
I saw a commercial with him, not the ones where he's like ripping stuff up and popping balloons. Those are dumb. But there's a commercial where he's just training laterally, and he's moving like he's not human. Like his side to side movement is like some sort of, he looks like the Babadook, just going back and forth, just got the quickness. And he's so like big, but when he's hunched over, he looks more hulking and yet so fast at the same time. It's scary. It's definitely better than like popping balloons and stuff for a commercial.
Sure,
show your athlete being scary. And
yeah,
I think that'll go a long way. And it does. And he is very good. I think the only guy that regularly beats him or gets the better of him, I should say, you know, like, and by get the better of him, I mean in 20 matchups, the other guy will win 4 or 5 of them, I think is Wolf. He's the only guy I've seen that actually can put some screws on him and make him need help. But even still, like, Durkin still gets on him pretty evenly. I think, you know, Durkin won Defender of the Year last year. I think he's all the way front in line. There's very few people next to him this year so far.
Right. Yeah, I would say it is his to lose. He's kind of like the relationship for him and Wolf. It's kind of like, say Durkin's a baseball player and he can hit curveballs, he can hit splitters, he can hit fastballs, whatever, whatever. But Wolf's is like a 106 mile an hour fastball.
Yeah.
It's like, here's what I'm going to throw at you. And yeah, you're just going to miss it a lot.
What's the surprise with Florida?
Florida's surprise? They're having some scoring struggles. You know, Dylan Malloy or Kieran McArdle are kind of shouldering that load. It's a surprise. So it's a surprise and it isn't a surprise. Last year, they made the playoffs last year and they had some huge, huge games late in the year, but they still were last in scoring. So it is not a surprise in that regard. It is a surprise because you would think this following year would kind of lead to a next step. You know, everybody kind of knows their roles because they're talented players. So you would think there's an evolution there. And having a young team like this, it's not like you have to worry about somebody aging out of the lineup or something like that. And you think Malloy having more experience, you know, Mariano having more experience, just getting used to the whole pro scene would lead to another step. And the team as a whole hasn't really made that. So, you know, I think you kind of, based on last year, you say, okay, this leads to better, bigger and better things. But that's not necessarily the case in the MLL. You know what I mean? You can be worst to first. You can be, you know, who knows? So, I think it is a surprise in that regard that, you know, we haven't really seen anything else from these guys yet offensively.
Yeah, I mean, they lost to Boston by one goal. I think, obviously, Dallas, you know, mollywhopped them the week before on kind of a short week. But I don't know. They still held, like, Denver to seven goals earlier in the season. I don't understand exactly where the disconnect is. Because when they're scoring in broken plays, like, the launch of some of the prettiest goals of the MLL season so far. Right?
Yes.
Brian Cole had a one-hander against the Cannons that's like, you know, one-handed goals are like the new hotness. And he had a sick one. And, you know, they almost tied that game. They had a bunch of shots in the last couple minutes to bring that level. And the Cannons just surged over them and kept hold on the lead there to win it. But, yeah, I don't know. I think Florida's a team that just needs to find a way to win. You know, they lost to New York by one goal. Lost Chesapeake by three goals. I just think that they need to hunker down a little bit more and support Austin Kaut in net, because their defenders get dragged, besides Durkin. They get dragged hard out to the wings. Like, I think they have a bunch of young guys that are still learning where to go and how to play defense in the MLL. Remarkably similar to other leagues where you have to protect the net. Just FYI.
Yes.
The next team we're going to talk about are the New York Lizards. The Lizards are 3-3, and that's surprising because you look at the roster and you go, look at all these great players on offense. How can they lose games? Like, they should be scoring 20 goals a game, but they don't. They just don't. They do have Rob Pinnell, Paul Rabil, Joe Walters, and Will Manny. And I don't know if there's a better top four in terms of versatility and goal scoring and ability to initiate in lacrosse than those four players. That's crazy. I think the problem is the other two guys, whoever they are, sometimes get in the way. They just added Joel Tinney, who looked pretty good in his debut, scored a goal. But I think that they struggle in the middle of the field and they struggle athletically, which is not something you hear a lot about MLL teams, because they are such – these are the pinnacle of that athletic kind of achievement is to be on an MLL team if you're a lacrosse player. I just don't think they have a lot of speed. You know, all their speed is like Steve DiNapoli. There's quickness. There's playmaking. There's instinctual play, but box to box, 2-point line to 2-point line, they get outrun a lot. That's just my take. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying. You know, they have just the way that their offense is set up. You have guys who you should just kind of be able to rely on. You know what I mean? Like, if you get the ball down to the offensive end, and you say, okay, Rob Pinnell, you've got it with a full shot clock there, something good should be able to happen just based on the roster. Now, the issue that's going to separate New York from being at the top of the standings or, you know, postseason run or whatever is what's going to take place before the ball gets to that arc. Face-offs, are they going to win enough face-offs? Like, are they going to stay, we'll say, above 50% on it? Because, you know, they do have that, you know, Gurenlian hangover. He's gone now. Are they going to be able to, you know, how much success was based on keeping the ball out of the defensive end because of Greg Gurenlian being there? And so, you know, if those possessions, are they going to pay for them on the defensive end now? Because, you know, I'm not super worried. I think Rob Pinnell has started off, even by Pinnell standards, has started off very, very well this season.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's kind of been carrying the things. And then Manny and Walters have also been just really putting on some impressive shows. But it's just, like I said, it's just going to be a matter of getting them the opportunities and not paying along the way. You know, so like you said, it is going to come down to athleticism between the arcs. The defense having solid one-on-one close defenders there as well, and really just making sure things are okay. Like, if things are fine anywhere else, they should be great. But they have to make sure there aren't any sort of weaknesses anywhere. They don't have that leash anymore.
Yeah, and that's where I kind of think we're going to the surprise there. Obviously, I think their best player is Rob Pinnell. You think that as well?
Yep.
Yeah, pretty easily. And there's one guy you didn't talk about that was producing at a regular level, and that's Paul Rabil.
Yes.
Even though he tied Junior for the most points ever by one player in the MLL in this past game, and will likely break that this weekend when they play, I don't know if he's been consistent, period. And by don't know, I mean I know he hasn't, and he knows it too. I think that the ball doesn't need to go through him if you have all those other guys. You know, you put Walters and Manny on that right side, you know, you better go down the right side. You better go the other way. You know, I think he can do that. I just haven't seen him do it consistently. And that's really, really what it comes down to, is consistent initiation, ball carrying into the heart of the defense, and scoring. Because they have those, again, I cannot stress this enough. That four on offense is not topped by any other team in the league. It might be matched. There might be teams that have better five. There's definitely teams with better six. But one through four, those four guys, I don't think it's rivalable. It's not achievable for any other team. And again, you play with six. I think the other thing to look at here, and this is what I think, the other problem I think with this team, is that the defense is not stopping anyone. You know, I think last year we gave them a pass because they had a bunch of guys that were at the end of their career. They had a lot of vets come in and do a job and take a lunch pail out there and do their work. This year it's a lot of young guys. They're relying a lot on Austin Pafani. You know, Joe Fletcher is still Joe Fletcher. He's still a great defender. I think that they just have a bunch of guys that are bad at help defense. And that's just it. I think that's the only problem. I mean, Drew Adams got so frustrated in a game, he took a swing at a guy. He took a swing at Eric Law for scoring on him in the waning seconds of a game with a stick and didn't get suspended. I want to catch you guys up on that, because that happened. Way to go, league. But the league also fined Ryan Flanagan for talking about pizza and beer. And that kind of sent everyone into a tizzy, and I'm here to tell you the reason behind that suspension and why I didn't freak out on Twitter like a lot of other people is that Flanagan's been poking the league and LSN, which broadcasts the games, for a year. He'll start a Twitter fire and run away and just watch it burn. And he's been warned multiple times, and he finally got the hammer dropped on him. That's the real story of that fine, guys. I'm going to be real with you. It didn't come out of nowhere. Y'all need to know that. Okay, and that's the reason why I didn't freak out about it or even really write anything about it, because to me, there's nothing to write about. You got warned a bunch of times and you decided to poke the bear one last time. And I don't think it was malicious at all on his part. And I don't think it was malicious on the league's part. It's just kind of like, if someone pokes you enough, eventually you're either going to poke them back or, you know, throw something at them. And what they did was they threw a fine at him, and he had to take it. And, you know, he did take it. I'm not here to disparage either party. I just want the truth behind that to be known. So any other thoughts on New York before we move on to our next team?
Real quick, I'll say just about the Flanagan thing. Honestly, from reading his tweet, I didn't even get a bad taste in my mouth from the tweet. I thought it was just a humorous little story. I thought, honestly, because it was saying something about, like, you know, we didn't have a locker room or something like that. I mean, FAU Stadium has a locker room, and if I recall correctly, the game was at FAU Stadium. I thought maybe, oh, the toilets broke or the pipes burst, or, you know, like some, you know, wacky misfortune took place or something like that. I didn't even get a bad impression until later, you know, it kind of kept escalating. It was like, oh, you know, a fine took place and this and that and this and that. I read the whole thing and had no sort of even, you know, oh man, the league sucks or something like that. It didn't even cross my mind. That being said, maybe it was, do you think it was because new commissioner, he was like, you know, a new sheriff in town, like laying down the law right away, that kind of first day in prison kind of thing. You want to, you know, show everybody that you mean business.
First of all, Wacky Misfortune is definitely the title of my MLL book when I write that. I'm taking that. You'll get a little bit of credit on that later. I think it was just like, listen, you can't keep doing this. You can't keep antagonizing without a response. And I think they were waiting. Do I think they were waiting for him to say one more thing? Like when I coached, I would always yell at kids that like had something to say. I'd be like, say one more thing.
Right.
Say one more thing, you know, and then the kid would say one more thing and I'd be like, okay, you're out. Get out of practice later, you know, and I think that that's what the commissioner did. Like you don't do that with every player. You do that with a player that tests you, and that right. It's something that's good to be tested. But I think that he just had enough and was like, you know what? No one's even ever done this before. We're going to do it. I think it came off really wrong. Because the league did not tell that story. They just fined him without much of an explanation other than the one tweet. They should have put out a statement that said it was a culmination of other little things that led to it, but they didn't. And shocker, I don't know. I don't know if this shocks you guys. MLL PR bungling something. I don't know.
Not played in an ideal fashion.
No. And, you know, shocking to me. Shocking. All right. Let's talk about the Ohio Machine. Chris, take it away.
Absolutely. Your defending champion, Ohio Machine. A little bit of bumps to start off the road this season. They're 2-3. I wrote last week it wasn't the end of the world because they were 2-2. And they were 2-2 last year as well. So I was like, okay, maybe they'll smooth things out. Then they went out and got steamrolled in the first half against the Chesapeake Bayhawks. Climbed back and made it a game late. Kyle Harrison hit a two-pointer, then had another goal. Made things close, but couldn't quite pull off the comeback. So they've got some questions, some uncertainty. And some of that uncertainty comes from the absence of the gentleman who is their best player. And that's Tom Schreiber. I mean, we've talked about Tom Schreiber quite a bit, best in the world. That being said, and he's second on the team right now in points because he showed up, did his thing. You know, just he has 11 assists in the three games he's played. Yeah. He just makes everything run so smoothly around him. You know, like makes their man up, just quarterbacks the whole thing. Won't waste your time saying more great things about Tom Schreiber, but there is concern about this thing that's landed him back on the IR because, well, at least for me, I'm concerned when somebody who just had an injury goes back on the IR. And, you know, kind of well-publicized, had some NLL physical trouble, got put on the IR there, seemed to be good to go. By the start of this season, he returned, I think, at the end of the NLL season, if I remember that correctly.
Yeah.
Because I was wondering, I was like, is he going to be good to go by the time the Machine season starts? And then he showed up again for the Rocks. So I was like, okay, wow, I guess he's fine. But, you know, so three games, and then he's back on the IR. That's concerning because, you know, they have a lot of talented players on that team. You know, I mentioned Harris, and they got Marcus Holman. A lot of talented guys on both ends, but Schreiber brings something to the table that you know nobody else really brings. So it is concerning that he's absent. Do you think they can kind of? I mean, obviously you can't replace somebody like that, but you have to address it. Do you think they're going to be able to get by if this kind of plays out to a longer problem?
I think they are realizing now how much their midfield did for them. And, yeah. I mean, you know, you talk about Marcus Holman. Marcus Holman had 11 goals in one game this year. In five games, he has 17 total. That's not great. So if you take that one game out, he now has, you know, he now has 11 points. He had half his point total in one game.
Yeah.
That's nuts. That's absolutely nuts. I think that they're getting – job, they don't have anybody that's elevating really with Schreiber out. I think he, you're seeing how good Schreiber is and how much better he makes them by their poor performances on offense. You know, Jared Bernhardt has stepped up and played really well in spurts for them. But sorry, not Jared Bernhardt, Jake Bernhardt.
Yeah,
it's my fault. But I think that they're still looking for someone to make plays for them, you know, and that's not coming easy or hasn't come as easy. And I think the other problem with Ohio is that defense, the faceless man defense. You wish you didn't have faces right now. I'll run back that tape from last week. It was not good. Straight up not good. I mean, we talked about Florida pressing out too far. Ohio doesn't even do that. They're just slow to go on everything, and guys are blowing past them. I think last year, and this is my theory on kind of their slower start this year, is teams didn't dare to dodge on the poles, you know, and they didn't face a lot of teams later in the season that had great dodging attackmen. And I'm sure I'll get a comment in a text from their coach after he listens to me say that. But listen, you got to go back and look at the tape. You're not playing well. 2-3 is not good for defending champion, you know, and just like, you know, 3-4 isn't good for Denver, who got to the championship game. You know, it's a combination of not necessarily sitting on your laurels, but expecting the same production out of the same guys when year in, year out, things can change in the MLL so quickly that you can't expect that. You basically have to have a backup plan for everyone on your roster. Your dressing roster is 19, but you got to have 19 other guys who can step into the roles that those guys play for you at a moment's notice. And that's why the MLL is so competitive, because those guys exist. But the problem is there are teams that are not good at finding them or rely on the draft to have them delivered to them. I think we're going to see Justin Gutterding pretty soon. And that'll be really interesting with this offense. I think that if they can get some penetration and get some shots to him and get him matched up against a guy that, you know, doesn't necessarily respect him enough, that he could have a huge game. He could have several 4, 5, 6 goal games. I absolutely believe that in the MLL. I think he has that ability. His body control, his shot selection, his ability to change levels is at a high level, even in the MLL. So I think, you know, watch that space. But again, the defense has to play better to protect that goal and to do their job to stop shots.
I mean, as far as Ohio is concerned, thank goodness for Kyle Burnlohr being just absolute brick wall on saves that you don't expect a goalie to make. You know what I mean? Like, he's a good goalie. He's a great goalie with regular shots. But as far as, like, if there's a category for, you know, stupid saves, he leads the league.
Yes.
Just one-on-one, just, you know, no business getting back. I mean, we saw it in college, and it's just completely made the leap to the pro game. There, he is never out of a play. And that really, really saves Ohio on several occasions in any given game. Their last game against Chesapeake, I mean, Ohio, we've talked about them for years as far as their close defense and, you know, like Carol Lewis and Longpole. You say, you know, wow, these guys are really great. You know what I mean? But this past weekend was the first time I remember actually watching a game saying, like, uh-oh, you know, they're not going to want to watch this footage. Yeah. This is not Ohio machine defense, you know, and nobody's going to be pleased by this. There's, you know, just poor angle taken and, you know, getting turned around and just – it just did not look like any – like the standard that they have come to play defense by was not there. And as far as whether or not that is a temporary thing, you know, I mean, everybody has a bad game, or if this is like something that needs to be addressed and, you know, they need to make some changes or something like that, that's up to them to figure out. But seeing it in that last game was like legitimately shocking for me, just the extent – that it had gone.
Yeah, and gone pretty much fairly unchecked. I don't want to keep harping on it because it was, you know, just a really bad example. But again, they did lose two other games and didn't and weren't in those games. Now, I think that's the surprising thing is when they lose, they lose. Like, they try to mount the comeback, and they just don't have enough, especially without Schreiber in the lineup. But again, I think with Gutterdang on the horizon and a couple guys stepping up, Peter Baum made his kind of late season debut a couple games ago. I think that they're on an uptick, so I don't want to be completely down on them. But yeah, that's where we're at with Ohio. It's surprising. The win loss is all over the place for all these teams. No one is where we thought they would be. And that's what makes it exciting. For now, we're going to move on to a new segment for this summer called the MLL Playlist. This was kind of an idea that we talked about doing as an article a while ago, and it just kind of spun out into, you know what, let's just do it on the podcast and try to have fun with it. So what we're going to do is we're either going to put this on Spotify or SoundCloud or both. We're going to curate a playlist for the summer. And when we interview MLL players on the show, we're going to interview Jordan Wolf after we talk about this, and he's going to put his song on there. We're going to have a full playlist kind of created. We did the first 6 songs because we didn't talk to any players the first 6 weeks, right? That's how that works. Yes. So then we can just have something at the end of the season that kind of marks, you know, a collaborative effort from all the players and us. And we just think it would be a cool idea. So we're going to do our 6. I'm going to go first. My thing with the playlist, I'm not really the music guy. That's definitely Chris, but I am the movie guy. And I definitely took stuff from movies for my songs. But my first one, I went a little obscure with it. We went with a summertime banger, and I don't even know if this is a summertime song, but for me, it always reminds me of kind of, you know, looking to better things. And that is Starlight by Snow Goons and Viral the Virus. It's a pretty old song. I think it's like 2004, 2005. I still love this song. I still play it. The story behind it is, unfortunately, the rapper Viro committed suicide a couple years ago. And it's kind of him talking about his struggles in, you know, music and trying to make it. And I've always listened to it as kind of like it sounds dark, but it's very uplifting. So that's my pick for my summertime banger. Chris, this will surprise no one that follows Chris on Twitter, but Chris, right, Tell us your first choice.
So first, before I do that, I got to say, a Trying to Make It song is one of the best songs. You can't beat a Trying to Make It song. So excellent, excellent pick. Yeah, if we're talking summertime bangers, and if you're talking me, I don't think it's any surprise to anyone that I am adding to this playlist, much like I'll add to any playlist having anything to do with summertime, Summertime by DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. As you know, Summertime by DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince is the song of the summer, as it has been each and every summer since it came out back in 93, something like that, I'm guessing.
Man.
So, yeah, it is the winner and still undefeated. So, yeah, let's put that up there.
All right. I went with a pump-up song for my next one. And, again, taken from a movie. This movie is on Netflix now, if you want to watch it. I don't think it's a good movie, but I think it has awesome moments in it. And that's Southpaw. And the song that I chose is Beast. And it's from the first scene. Like, the movie opens with this song playing in headphones with Jake Gyllenhaal, who's a boxer. He's about to go box. The weird thing about Southpaw, there are no Southpaws in Southpaw.
Well,
why?
That doesn't make any sense.
Why did you do that? Did you just film it reversed? What happened? Who hurt you? Why did you do that? Sorry. Chris,
it makes
no sense. I'm sorry. It's not a great movie, but it has great moments. The first, one of the best moments in the movie is the first scene in the movie. So definitely put it on Netflix for like 5 minutes. Watch it. You can go turn it off after that if you want.
I am blown away by that. I have not seen Southpaw. I wanted to see it, and I will see it at some point. But what? There are no that.
He's not a Southpaw. I didn't like. Why are you calling the movie that? It like, it's wild. It's like, oh, I found a boxing trainer. It's the guy who wrote Sons of Anarchy. wrote the script. So Kurt Sutter. Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
No, not at all.
Okay. Wow. So I'm responding with another pump up song of my own. And for that, I'm going moderate old school, not super old, but I'm going Guerrilla Radio by Rage Against the Machine. I think it's got everything you look for in a quality pump-up song. First of all, starting up with the just kind of the drums that start accelerating. It just tells everybody right away, okay, look, you're going to want to smash some stuff by the time the song's going. And you get kind of the sort of Ultimate Warrior shakes when the thing gets started.
Yes.
So you can't go wrong with that. It's got the Tom Morello kind of making his guitar sound super weird solo going there in the middle as well. It's got the whispers by Zach DeLosha, followed by the screaming. Checks every single box. So I got to have that up there.
You do not know how upset I am that you put a Rage song on. I didn't. But we'll move on. For my third and final song, I picked a ballad. Because you got to slow it down after the pump up.
Yeah.
You got to relax. You got to cool down. And mine is, this is a new song. The song's not new, but this version of it is. It's Biffy Clyro's Mountains from 2018 Unplugged. And I love this song because it got me through the drive to Gillette and back all weekend. I did not stay down there. I drove from New Hampshire to Gillette Stadium every day. For 4 days straight, it was awesome. I have no complaints, but that's because I had this song and this album that came out the Friday of a couple weeks ago, Four Championships. It's the 2018. It's actually an MTV Unplugged. Yeah. If you're old enough to remember MTV Unplugged, you should probably just go buy this album. This band is awesome, Scottish band. They've been around for a long time. I just discovered them. And I love their whole catalog. So definitely check out Biffy Clyro, Mountains from 2018's Unplugged.
Awesome. My, I guess, ballad that I'll close it out with is a little band from Austin, I believe, called Explosions in the Sky. Instrumental song, Your Hand in Mine. It is, if you don't know who these guys are, responsible for the theme music to Friday Night Lights, the TV show.
Oh.
And so, yeah, it's all like acoustic guitar kind of ballads and big airy anthem kind of stuff. And so I don't know if this is still true, but at least it was true like when I looked about a year ago. They made the theme song to Friday Night Lights, and then they said, okay, you can have it, and they decided not to release it anywhere else. It was like special just for that TV show. So you couldn't like go on iTunes or anything like that and get the theme song. So Your Hand in Mine, to my estimation, is the closest sort of Friday Night Lights theme-ish sort of thing that I had noticed in their catalog. So, you know, if you're going for a run or something like that, you're going to go climb some bleachers or whatever you're going to do, try putting on some Your Hand in Mine and, you know, they'll have a little bit of drums start building as well, and it'll probably get you going, and you'll feel a lot better by the end of the day.
Awesome. That will bring us to the interview with our guests, Dallas Rattler and Team USA attackman, Jordan Wolf. We'd like to welcome into the MLL podcast, Dallas Rattler's attackman and Team USA member, Jordan Wolf. Jordan, what's going on, man?
Not much. How you guys? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's the first part of the season. We're only like seven games in. I feel like we're killing it. We're catching up. This is the catch up pod. So I think we're just going to kick it off with some questions for you, and some business questions first, and then some fun questions later. To start off with, what did you think when you heard the Rattlers were moving to Dallas? Of all places, and how has that move been for you?
Yeah, it was definitely, we've been hearing for a while. When we finally got the official word, it was, a bit of a shock. As noted by, over the last few years, we have a very close team, and that was my biggest nerve, was just if we were getting split up, and, people have a lot of different things going on in their lives, in different directions, so You know, obviously it was sad leaving Rochester, you know, the city that drafted me. I have nothing but amazing things to say about the city. I loved every minute of going to Rochester. And, but, you know, fortunate enough, as we transitioned to Dallas, our whole team decided to go. And Dallas has been great. You know, they've welcomed us with open arms and been a huge support of the staff there. It's been unbelievable. So we're in a very fortunate position. So it was definitely bittersweet leaving Rochester, but very happy to be in Dallas.
And, you know, having to leave Rochester, one of the parts about leaving was Tim Sedang, head coach, ends up staying behind, and Bill Warder moves up to head coach spot. What's the difference you've noticed now that Warder's in charge, now that he's kind of calling the shots? Any difference?
Little bit of differences here and there. Obviously, I love Sudo. Everyone knows how much we love Sudo. I still talk to him on a daily, weekly basis. He's still involved in just being supportive of us. He came to a game a couple weeks ago, which was great to see him. He's someone I'll be close with forever. But I think Warder comes from the same sort of family focus, and Warder brings a lot of the same, you know, environment that we had with Rochester and Tim Sudan over to Dallas. So obviously he's kind of an extension of Sudo. So it's been a pretty seamless transition. I think that was a huge move by Dallas, keeping the coaching staff together, because I know that, you know, our team loved playing for those coaches and still do.
How do you think Ben Reeves will fit in the lineup for you guys? And also, are you cool with him after, you know, the championship thing?
I think Ben Reeves would fit into any lineup, to be quite honest. You know, he had an unbelievable run, had an unbelievable career. We're excited to have him on the team. I definitely have some bitter feeling towards him. Obviously, I was rooting very hard for Duke and Ned, Matt Tanowski, and Coach Tanowski. But now we're excited to get Ben going. This is kind of an important part of our season, obviously, for a lot of teams. So, you know, with a talent like his, we're very happy to have him.
A couple more here, shifting tones a little bit. What kind of stick are you currently using, and who does your stringing?
Who does my stringing? So I use a Maverick Optic head. It's the same head from the last few seasons. I don't like changing things too much, and I'm definitely not picky when it comes to my equipment. As long as something works pretty consistently, I'm fine. And I use a Maverick Hyperlite shaft, and I use East Coast mesh. I don't know how to string at all. I can barely tie a knot, so either East Coast Dye strings my sticks, or my little brother Evan, he's going to be a rising senior at Amherst. He's kind of the stick doctor of the Wolf family, so he strings a lot of mine when I'm nice to him, and he agrees to it.
All right, what is the last great movie that you saw?
Last great movie? I'm trying to think. I think there hasn't been that many great movies out recently. Two movies that I saw sort of recently. One is Straight Outta Compton. I saw part of it a while ago, but then I watched the whole thing through and really enjoyed that. And I was also going on a plane, I think back from Dallas, and watched Three Billboards, which got a lot of critical acclaim, and really thought that was great. I love Woody Harrelson. He's one of my favorite actors. So I think those are two great movies that I've seen recently.
Well, from any sport and any era, who is your favorite athlete?
My favorite athlete, it's not a question, it's Kobe Bryant. He's always been my favorite athlete. Obviously, he went to my high school, and that has a huge part to it. Lowell Marion loves Kobe Bryant. But I think, you know, in addition to what he's done in our community, our high school, you know, he donated a lot of money to our high school and gym, and obviously hooks him up with, you know, a lot of different gear. But I just think the way he approaches sports, his competitiveness, his drive, his attention to, you know, always wanting to be the best is something that I've, you know, kind of admired. As a young kid, it definitely hit home. I got to meet him when I was good. He's someone that I look up to. Obviously, he played a different sport, but just his approach to the game is exactly the way I want to look at lacrosse and anything I do in life.
All right, last thing. This season, we are doing an official MLL playlist for the summer. We're asking for one song from each player. So you're the first one. We did the first, like, six or so. So considering, you know, there's 6 weeks already. So you're going to get the first one. What song do you want to put on the MLL podcast playlist?
That's a tough question. I listen to nothing but Lil Wayne before games. I've been doing that since high school. And I just put his playlist on. So I like his old stuff. So I would say an old song. I Miss My Dogs is always one of my favorites. But any of his old stuff, I just put his playlist on.
All right, that'll do it. Thanks again to Dallas Rattler and Team USA member Jordan Wolf. Jordan, good luck the rest of the season and in Netanya.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much, guys, for all you do. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right, so Lil Wayne and Kobe. I didn't see it coming. I did not see that coming.
Neither. Especially the Lil Wayne selection. I don't know. I think I Miss My Dog is just a nice sentiment. But you don't hear it a lot when you're talking about classic Lil Wayne. So yeah, good for Jordan Wall.
I think if you go back on the tape, you can hear Chris audibly gasp. It's pretty great. It's pretty great. All right. Next part of the segment, we're going to do a little more pop culture for you guys. This is – Chris and I are each going to do different versions of this, but it's pretty similar idea. It's my recommendation of the week. So all throughout the college season, I did an NCAA podcast with Dan Abern, who's editing this. Shout out to Dan Abern. Called In the Crease. Part of that podcast involved me picking the weirdest thing that I watched that week. Oh, there's police. It was painful. It was terrible. And I have no desire to relive that segment. So this is not that segment. This is going to be something that I actually like and I enjoy a lot and I share with you guys. This week, it's a lot of times going to be stuff I've seen before that I go back and watch in the summer because no one wants to be bummed out in the summer, right?
Right.
Nobody wants that. It was going to be Training Day, but it went off of Netflix on June 1st. So I watched the next best thing on Netflix, and that is Martin Scorsese's The Departed. And I just finished it before we started taping, and I want everyone to know that I will be screaming, "Are you a cop?" for the next 2 weeks. So apologies to my friends and family. Again, cops are coming right now for this, but yeah, go check it out if you've never seen it. And if you have seen it, go watch it again. It's free. It's on Netflix. Listen, we all know you have Netflix and no cable. It's okay. There's no shame anymore. That's what your parents' like passwords are for. They still have cable. Don't worry about it. Just go ask.
Good choice. You can watch The Departed. Well, I say you, I can definitely watch The Departed literally every time it's on television.
Yes.
It's just one of those movies.
It really is. That's what this is going to be. It's going to be recommendation of the week, things that I love. You'll probably heard a lot of them, some of you won't, but starting off with a classic.
Excellent.
And that will bring us to kind of the end of the show here. We're going to talk about the games this weekend. The games this week actually start on Thursday, and the first one we have is a rematch of the last two championship games, and that's Denver versus Ohio this Thursday at 2 p.m. on LSN. Chris, what are your thoughts?
So just looking at this game and schedule, my first thought was it kind of seems like a trap, and not like a trap game where, you know, I'm saying one team stinks and, you know, the other team, you know, like they always have those in college and stuff like that, college football or whatever. It's just like an actual trap for Ohio. It's a very short week, middle of the day kind of game. It's going to be in Denver. Like, is Ohio going to be able to field an ideal version of their team? Like, is everybody going to be there? Are they going to get a legit walkthrough? Like, you know, are people going to be there on Wednesday, or is it going to be, you know, flying in Thursday morning and then just doing a throw around or something like that? Whatever they're going to do, they're going to have to do it against the Denver team that, I guess it is, you know, we discussed earlier the problems they had, but they do appear to be getting better, you know, as they should be as the season progresses. So I mean, Ohio's got more cut out for them.
Yeah, I think real quick, my thoughts here, pretty much the same. One thing we didn't talk about with Ohio is that they could have gotten Joe Nardella. He was being shot by the Canons. Atlanta ended up getting him for that first round, but Ohio never pays market value for guys. So the only way they were doing that is if maybe they traded a pick, but I don't think they were willing to part with the necessary, you know, pick level. I'm sure they threw out a second rounder and another player who I won't name that they put in literally every trade they try to make. But Chris is like, yeah, I'm not going to say it either.
Nope.
No, not worth it. But they have struggled mightily at the faceoff X. I think that's another big part of it. I don't want to put it all on the defense. I don't want to make it seem like that's what we're trying to do. But this year, they've only won 62 faceoffs out of 149. That is not a championship level faceoff win rate. And I think that, you know, they're going with Kenny Massa. I think he struggled a little bit. It does take guys a little time to get used to the league. He's 38 for 79 so far. I feel like they should have made a move there, but I think that at least with a young guy, they can maybe develop him a little bit more and get more results. But they play twice this week. They play two of the teams that are surging in Denver this game and Chesapeake on Saturday. So, I mean, at least the Chesapeake game is a home game, but yeah, I would think that this is a little bit of a trap game, but I think that Denver, you know, is on a little short rest as well. So it could work both ways. Denver hosting, I think, plays a lot better in their own stadium. And teams do struggle. Again, the altitude thing is real. I can't go to Colorado without altitude sickness. So I don't know how these dudes play in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is legit.
It's a real thing. It's a real thing. And, you know, I think Denver will is my odds-on favorite to pull this one out. The next thing we're going to talk about is Dallas versus Boston, also on Thursday. This game is at 7 p.m. What do you think about this one?
I think I'm interested to see what Boston's kind of going to do for their encore. This feels like a pivotal game as far as, you know, Boston goes. They had success against Florida. You saw Trevor Baptiste already get his first game out of the way, you know, and played much better in the second half than in the first half. They have a lot of stuff to build on. You know, Mark Cockerton makes a debut and does very well. So now it's all about what are they going to do for this encore? You know, like, is Mark Cockerton, okay, I assume he's not going to score 6 goals again, but, you know, is he going to score 3 or 4? Or is Dallas coming with, you know, the benefit of not being surprised, whereas, you know, like, they've been planning for him this whole time. The same with Baptiste. You know, Dallas is going to have plans in place now that they've got a little more on film than what Florida did. And plus, you know, Dallas has been just playing better. So I think it's a real sort of test to see exactly where Boston is after that win.
Yeah, I think Dallas is playing really well and really well on offense, able to generate even late in the shot clock. I think that's kind of the key to Dallas's success so far, is late in the shot clock they've been producing. And with Boston, you know, I think that they got a nice lift after beating Florida. You know, that's a team that it's not like they were leading the whole time. You know, they had to come back and make a run and secure that game, and they did it. And I think it's the first time they've done that all season. So the other game, they had the – I believe it was also against Florida. They had the lead for the most part of the game. But, yeah, I think that shows a little bit of moxie from the Canons. And I wouldn't be surprised if this is also a trap game for Dallas. They might take Boston a little lightly, and there's a bunch of guys on that Boston roster that are hungry to prove themselves. You know, James Pinnell, Sergio Perkovic, not just the guys that they have – you know, added in Cockerton and Will Sands. I think they have a lot of guys that want to contribute and are hungry. I think the problem is they have no one to defend Jordan Wolf or anyone else on that attack line. You know, Randy, we didn't even mention this. Randy Stats plays for the Rattlers. Like, hi, how are you going to guard that guy? I don't think the Boston Long Poles have not covered themselves in glory all season.
Yeah, you know, there could be some problems there. One thing about Boston before I forget it again, shout out Zed Williams for that like moonwalking behind the back goal he dropped last week.
So sick.
I have never seen anything like that personally.
No.
Yeah, good for him.
It's like he mesmerized his defender to just be like, are we doing dance moves? Like what are you backpedaling? Like it was almost like it confused him into it. You know, put him in a glass case of emotion. Just went BTB on his face. It was pretty great. Definitely check that out if you can. The next game, we're getting into the Saturday games. Ohio versus Chesapeake, Saturday, 6 p.m. on LSN. Chris, what do you think about this one?
Like we mentioned earlier, I think when we were talking about Ohio in particular, these guys just played, and Chesapeake was the team that kind of opened one up on them that they had to come climbing back from. Now, that being said, some of that lopsided score with Ko Amato, who was playing absolutely out of his mind. Now, he's been playing well, so even if there is some sort of drop-off from the, you know, ridiculous performance he put on, you know, Ohio's still going to have their work cut out for him. And, you know, it's obviously going to be less of an issue since it's on the week weekend, but both of these rosters, I'm interested to see what they're going to look like. You know, will we get Justin Gutterding? Does he need a little more time off, or, you know, are they going to pencil him in later? Will he make his debut weekend? Seems reasonable. Same with Chesapeake. Got a pleasant weekend weekend evening game. Is this when they add a few more of their guys that have been waiting in the wings as well? So I don't know who's going to be on the field, but I think that's going to make a very big difference in this game.
Yeah, I think if Chesapeake can kind of just keep their momentum, they're in a position to control this one. You know, I don't think that Ohio can go into any game anymore and think that they're going to be the favorite. I mean, not at home. That's weird. That's weird to say. I can't believe I just said that. I actually don't believe I just said that.
That's weird.
But I think it's true. I think against Chesapeake, they're probably the favorite against like Florida or Boston or something, but I don't think they're the favorite against a surging Chesapeake team that really just went off last week. You know, this is a team that can get a lot of goals, win a lot of faceoffs, and put the pressure on you to beat them. And I think that if they can do that again, Ohio is, you know, in trouble. I think the faceoffs are big here. And again, the short week, are you going to dress a similar roster? Are you going to save a guy for this game that you don't play against Denver? What are we going to do there? Last game of the week, New York versus Florida. There's another game. New York versus Florida, Saturday, 7 p.m. on LSN. How do you see this one shaking out for the Lizards and the Launch?
Well, so Florida and New York, I mean, Florida has been a serious, serious opponent for New York. Great, they've had some stumbles this season. You know, we talked about early on, haven't been going great for them, but they have stood up nicely in years past against the Lizards. And plus, you know, let me just skip here. Rob Pinnell versus Tucker Durkin. That's why I'm going to watch. That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm in that neighborhood, I am paying money to go watch that in person. Assuming Tucker Durkin's going to be there. I don't know, because I'm not sure where he was last week. I don't think he was ever on the field against Boston, unless I'm mistaken. But assuming he is in the lineup and everything like that, he has had some epic battles against Rob Pinnell. So that's the headliner for me. I mean, it says New York versus Florida, but I want to see Pinnell versus Durkin.
Yeah, I hope to see that as well. Yeah, he did not play last week. So yeah, okay. You're right there. And, you know, New York did beat Florida earlier. 14 to, they lost to New York, won 14-13 against Florida in their first meeting. And Florida had four chances to tie the game, and they blew them all. So I think that game's really close. Florida surged back, and then you know, New York and Joe Walters specifically and Will Manny kind of took over and scored the goals they needed to win it. And I think that that's going to need to happen once again for New York to get the season sweep here. Last game is Atlanta versus Charlotte, also on Saturday, also at 7 p.m. I think this is huge for both teams. This is a huge, huge game for both teams. Charlotte is reeling a little bit. I think after that last loss, as is Atlanta, I think that both of these teams think that they're title contenders.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm sold on either one, and this is the game that could sell me. What do you think?
I definitely agree with what you're saying there. It's like this is kind of like a job interview for both of these teams. You know, Charlotte has the, you know, the standings, they have their spot, but Atlanta is a very strong, balanced team, you know, and
Charlotte's going to have to come up with a lot of answers for a lot of different guys. And, you know, they're going to bring Nardell out there for facing off purposes for Atlanta. So they're going to have a chance to be in every possession. And, I mean, this is a tough test for them. They just got off of a tough test with Denver. But Atlanta is tough, and they are getting tougher. I had a bunch of rookies they rolled out last week who kind of have the first game, you know, wide-eyed jitters or whatever, that they've already shaken, and, you know, they're good to go. Guys like Connor Kelly got two goals last game anyway. I mean, kind of hit the ground running. But this is, I mean, 3-3, but Atlanta is no joke, and Charlotte has some work to do.
Yeah, I think we're going to see if Charlotte's success early in the season was built on the failings of other teams or, you know, a foundation for continued success for the rest of the season. And this game is the perfect showcase for that. We're going to close this out. Chris has a tradition that he's bringing to the podcast for all of you guys listening, and I'm just going to let him explain it.
Okay, so I've got an old tradition I used to do. I used to send out like a newsletter for some of my friends years ago, and I'd always close it out with an MVP of the column. And basically, that is anything, person, place, or thing, or whatever, that just kind of won the week. You know what I mean? The best thing that happened, or best person who did whatever. So I want to say the MVP of this week has been a gentleman by the name of James Prince, a.k.a. Jay Prince, who is CEO of Rap-A-Lot Records in Houston. And he's the MVP because there's not really like a super huge need to know who he is necessarily. He's kind of a behind-the-scenes music mogul kind of guy. But he is also a super mover and shaker kind of guy. And so basically what he did is let me see if you heard some of this. Are you familiar with the Drake and Pusha T beef?
Oh, yes. I'm familiar.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I went back and forth, you know, and it, just for people who don't know, there were some jabs that have been going on for a long time, and Pusha T puts out his album and has some jabs kind of thrown at Drake. You know, standard stuff people said about Drake, you have ghostwriters. That's basically like the Drake insult. You don't write all your own stuff. So then Drake is like, okay, well, I'm going to go back. And he escalated it significantly.
Shouldn't have done that.
No, you should not have done that. Goes after Pusha T, brings in some family members, talks about how he actually did some ghostwriting on some Kanye West stuff, who produced Pusha T's stuff, and so on and so forth. Ultimately sends him an invoice from his own Drake's company, saying, you know, basically I'm charging you money because I'm keeping you relevant. A lot of things you should not do, and you shouldn't go after Pusha T. And so Pusha T said, okay, I'm going to take this way farther than anyone has ever gone before. And he super escalated the whole thing, put out a picture of Drake that I'm sure Drake prayed would never see the light of day. Bearing the lead, apparently maybe Drake has a child that nobody knew about, and Pusha T brought that to light as well. So everybody, Drake has to respond. And this guy, Jay Prince, said, no, he doesn't. And he just called Drake and said, hey, this is done. And so it's over. It is literally over. Because Jay Prince said it needs to be over.
Wow.
Yeah. This dude, he said, I quote, I made an phone call. And I don't know if you've ever made an OG phone call. I have never made an OG phone call. But apparently it ends everything.
Chris, I'm not going to lie to you. I've made an OG phone call.
Oh, okay.
I just want to be real on the podcast. So MVP of the week. There
Jay
we go.
Jay Prince for snapping his fingers and ending everything.
Listen, you got to have serious power to end a beef. Thanks everyone for listening. The next episode won't be as long, but we thought it was really important to catch you guys up. on the MLO and get you ready for the rest of the season. It's been wild, and you needed to know. So now you know. You're ready to go into this week's games, and you're all caught up. And again, thanks for listening. Subscribe, leave a rating on the Inside the Cross iTunes page, or, you know, tell a friend and get them to subscribe. Chris, where can they find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter at ChrisRosie22 or Instagram at Chris Rosenthal.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at TheKyleDevitt. Check you later. Squash Chiefs. Yeah.